And we're back.
Welcome to The Arts Hole. This is the podcast where we take apart pieces of art and see if we can put them back together again just a little bit better.
Yes.
My name's Bea Roberts. I'm a scriptwriter and a script doctor. With me I have Mr. Luke Haynes.
I've got a new jumper.
He's actually a very wonderful author. And if you're not subscribed to Luke's Substack, you really should be.
It's hit and miss.
Clomping about in the background, you may be able to hear Disco the podcast puppy.
We've given her something to chew to distract her, so hopefully that'll work.
Yes. Yeah. And speaking of chewing... Oh,
we're going to be looking at The Menu, a film that we nearly paid money for. We dodged that bullet. This is a film that came out, what, a couple of months back, and you were still in London at the time.
Yes.
And I came to visit you.
Yeah.
And we were going to go and see a movie, and it was the only thing that was starting relatively soon. We were like, looks okay, and then we couldn't be arsed in the end.
No, I think it was like two sold out for us to go.
It? Yeah, ironically, for the plot, which we'll get to, I guess, in the coming seconds when I finish the sentence that I'm speaking currently now, full stop. So, see how smooth I am at this?
Is that sort of bad, desperate look you had in your eyes as you were talking to me then, like a man that's falling off a building?
Yes, I wasn't sure where I was going, and I'm often as surprised as anybody else to learn where the end point is.
Two things. One, we have an announcement about the podcast that we're going to do at the end of this.
Yes.
And two, we're going to completely spoiler this movie, so if you haven't seen we're totally spoilering it.
Yeah. I think they spoil it themselves, to be fair, but we'll get to it. So Nicholas Holt is a foodie. You know those people. I hate those people.
I'm a bit of a foodie.
You're not, though. You're not one of those people that, like, makes your whole personality about eating food.
No, I just really like eating.
Yeah, that's different, though. I mean, like
that's food, a glutton.
It's one of those things where, like, you know, food is popular because we all have to eat it. It's, like, universally enjoyed, but some people make it their whole thing, and nothing else that's universally popular has that, like...
I think
oral sex, right? I'm a real oral sex guy. I go around judging blowjobs for their moisture content and stroke rate. No,
wow, that's not where I thought you were going.
See, always a surprise.
I think that, like, enjoying different types of food and being interested in the food you eat and wanting it to be good quality is fine. I think it's when you get super uptight about it. It's like we've actually just started watching The Bear on Disney, which has, like, been this enormously critically acclaimed series, and I can see why it's brilliant, but I just can't. I'm like, why are you so stressed out about this sandwich making? You're making a sandwich. Yeah. Can everyone calm down?
This was my problem during my bar industry years. Like, people get really uptight about cocktail making. It's like, guys, we're making drinks. We're not curing cancer here.
Exactly.
At the end of it, everyone will be pissed and go home. That's the end of your night.
I just cannot get on board. Yeah. I mean, even with theatre, we're just like, do you know what? No one's going to die if the show isn't very good. It'll be fine.
Unless it's Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. But that's a whole separate... Anyway, we're getting way out in the weeds here.
Sorry.
Nicholas Holt is a food enthusiast and is taking his date, Anya Taylor-Adequacy. I'm just saying, she's been in some real shit lately and she is no longer sparking joy for me. We didn't finish The Queen's Gambit last night in Soho.
I did think it was good. She's amazing in The Witch. Last night in Soho did suck. She did not suck in it.
Okay.
This movie kind of sucks. She does not suck.
She's not bad. She's just in some. She's making some bad choices.
Yeah.
Okay. Anya Taylor-Joy is Nicholas Holt's date, and they are going. I'm going to get to the first plot point any second now. Any minute, I'm going to be arriving right at it, right on time. Anya Taylor-Joy and Nicholas Holt go to an island owned by a celebrity chef played by Ralph Fiennes of Voldemort fame. Where he has a restaurant there for a very select group of clientele. You have to book and way in advance and get special tickets, and he's going to cook for this half a dozen people or so.
Yeah, it's like 12 people are allowed every night. Yeah.
Also on the island are a group of investor dude bros, a washed up action star played by John Leguizamo, an elderly billionaire couple.
Yeah.
We started watching this film hoping that it would be good, so I didn't start taking notes. So I'm just going to read directly from Wikipedia for the synopsis. Right?
Yeah. So I mean, the trailer looks great, and it's got a lot of really interesting stuff in it, but I think it does falter.
Yeah. The other guests are Lillian Bloom, a food critic, wealthy couple, washed up movie star, business partners. Oh, and Ralph Fiennes' alcoholic mother, who is just sort of sat in a corner drinking for the entire film. Nice work if you can get it. The group is given a tour of the island by the restaurant's maitre d', Elsa, who notes that Margot, Anya Taylor-Joy, was not the original date that Nicholas Holt was planning on bringing. Dinner begins, and the chef introduces a series of courses, delivering increasingly unsettling monologues about each dish. I disagree with Wikipedia there. I don't think it was increasingly it started out fine. It all seemed equally pretentious. It's one of the problems that I have with this.
What I think is that when he gets into his tragic backstory...
Yeah.
So, it's very, very and deliberately satirical about this, like, incredibly high-art cuisine where they get, you know, they get a bread course with no bread in it because there's a whole monologue about that, about, you know, these are all kind of art pieces as food. But then he talks about a horrible series of growing up under domestic violence with his alcoholic mother and stabbing his father.
Yeah.
In the thigh, and then they serve up a steak with a thigh steak with a knife in it and stuff. So it starts to become quite. Yeah. I think that's pretty fucking sinister.
Yeah, it's very performance arty, and like all the chefs live in what is basically a cult on the island. They all have to get up at 5 a.m. from their communal bunkhouse to go and tend to the gardens and the bees and everything that makes all of the ingredients for the food on the island.
Yeah,
and they are all completely enthralled to Ralph Fiennes. For the third course, uncomfortable truths about each guest ranging from affairs to embezzlement are exposed via laser-printed images on the tortillas that they are served.
This is fucking great.
That is a good idea, yeah. For a fourth course, a sous chef kills himself in front of the guests because he's not got the flair for food making that Ralph Fiennes demands.
He's not a genius.
Yeah, he has no passion. He wants to be good, but he just doesn't quite have the spark for it, and so Ralph Fiennes makes him kill himself.
So everyone, some of the guests at this point are, you know, the food critic in particular is like, oh, this is amazing. This is all part of the theatre. Other people, like Anya Taylor-Joy, is kind of our point of view person. She's the normal person who's been thrust into this increasingly bizarre situation and is really like, I think a guy just actually killed himself. I don't think that was a prank.
And Nicholas Holt, as her date, is still just completely enthralled to it and thinks this is wonderful.
Yeah.
One of the older couple tries to escape, but the staff cut him off and then cut off his finger. Cut off his ring finger to make clear that he's having affairs, and also just to let you know they're not fucking around. The angel investor for the restaurant, i.e. the guy who put up the money to back the chef, is revealed to be the boss of the three investment bros. He is then revealed to be suspended from a crane outside and is drowned in front of the guests.
He's not fucking about now.
Because Ralph Fiennes had to relinquish control of the restaurant to him, and he's angry about this. For the fifth course, which begins with the chef allowing himself to be stabbed by a female employee who he had sexually harassed, female guests die while the male guests are given the chance to escape the island, but the staff catch all of the men and present them with another dish, and drag them back to the dining area. The chef explains that each guest was invited because they either contributed to him losing his passion for his craft, or because they make a living off of exploiting the work of artisans and workers like him and his team. So that's the overall point that we're going for here.
And so there's a certain point where obviously they've really done detailed research into all of the guests, and there's this kind of almost like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Everyone's done a crime. Yeah. Everyone's going to get a kind of justice thing that's happening. And when he takes Anya Taylor-Joy aside and is like, you're not one of them.
Yeah, you're not the planned date for the night, which is the...
Yeah, and so you can give us... And it becomes clear that she's actually an escort who's been hired. And so he gives her the choice. He was like, you can join our team or you can join their team.
But we're all going to die, but you can die as one of us or you can die as one of them. Yeah. It's basically the choice that he gives her. Yeah, and that's the next point on Wikipedia there. Margot was unmasked as an escort who has served the old guy whose finger they cut off in the past. Her real name is Erin. The chef reveals that Nicholas Holt's character was invited to the dinner months in advance and informed that the guests would be killed, so Nicholas Holt knew the entire time. Despite this, he was so zealous in his desire to participate in the chef's craft that he kept the secret and hired Margot to replace his ex-girlfriend for the evening because he didn't because there was no seating for a party of one. He had to bring a date of somebody, so he's hired this escort. The chef then humiliates Nicholas Holt by forcing him to cook and insulting his food, and then orders him to hang himself. Margot discovers his body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird. The chef asks Margot to collect a barrel needed for dessert. En route to getting it, Margot sneaks into the chef's house, only to be attacked by a zealous maitre d'. Margot kills the maitre d' in self-defense by stabbing her in the neck. After seeing a framed Employee of the Month award showing the chef as a young and happy fast food cook, Margot finds a radio and calls for help and returns to the restaurant with the barrel.
Oh, this bit's good.
A Coast Guard officer arrives from his boat, but after the guests are convinced they've been saved, he reveals himself to be a line cook in disguise and then returns to the kitchen.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bit where the Coast Guard officer turns up and asks John Leguizamo's washed-up action star for an autograph where he scrawls "Help Us" on a napkin. But then he throws a napkin away and he's like, ah, joke's on you, I was one of them the whole time. There's no such thing as the Coast Guard.
It's a good twist.
Yeah, that does work. As dessert is being prepared, Margot mocks the chef's dishes and loveless cooking and complains that she's still hungry because the portions are small. When the chef asks her what she would like to eat, she requests a cheeseburger. Moved by her humble request, the chef does so, finding joy in creating the dish, and after she requests it to go, he and the staff allow her to leave. She takes the Coast Guard boat dock nearby and escapes the island. Where do they get a Coast Guard boat from if he's not a real Coast Guard guy?
They were really doing a bit.
I guess. They really commit to the bit.
Commit to the bit.
The dessert is an elevated s'mores dish. The staff cover the floor with crushed graham crackers and adorn the guests with stoles made of marshmallows.
I love this
and
bit.
And hats made of chocolate. So it then sets the restaurant ablaze, detonating the barrel and killing the guests, the staff, and himself. Margot watches from the boat, eating her cheeseburger, and wipes her mouth with a copy of the menu at the end.
Yay!
Wank, wanky, wank, wank, wanky, wanky, wank, 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 wanky, wank, okay. Wank, wank.
Okay. So I thought I'd give slightly more detailed feedback.
I mean, I had a second verse, but it's much the same as the first one, so you go ahead.
Okay, so I always say the things that I liked about this movie.
Yeah.
I think there's some great moments in it. There's some really good turns and twists. The Coast Guard is one of my favourites. Hmm. There are some times that I actually gasped, which is really good. The reveal that Nicholas Hoult has hired, you know, it was like, oh, someone's got to die with me, so I'll just hire an escort.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't matter. All of that stuff is great. I love the ending is so deranged. There's a guest sitting there with like marshmallow capes and like looks like Rolo's hats
yeah.
on. It's completely fucking deranged, and that they're all going to be giant s'mores set on fire. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
I loved the ending. I thought that was great. Ralph Fiennes gives a really good central performance.
I mean, Ralph Fiennes is always good.
Yeah.
I mean, controversial opinion, Ralph Fiennes pretty good at the old acting, I think. We can agree at this point.
He does give a good... It's a weird ask of an actor, and
yeah.
he commits to it completely. He makes something that is actually really unbelievable seem pretty believable, and he treads this line between being... sort of psychotic, and he murders people. He's
yeah.
going to murder a whole room full of people and himself and all of his staff. And so that's an incredibly heightened thing to give, but he also manages to give this sort of wounded sort of that
yeah.
he's in pain underneath it. It's what I'm saying is it's a complex and nuanced performance on a very cartoonish kind of character.
Yeah.
And he was nominated for an Emmy, and I think that's well deserved.
I mean, I think to skip ahead slightly, one of my big criticisms is that duality within the actual film itself, though. I don't think that
yeah.
works. I mean, like I say, he's doing a good job of trying to sort of ground both parts of it at
yes.
the same. He's landing both planes at once, which is quite
exactly.
difficult.
And
yeah.
I think in lesser hands, it would be far more of a mess, because
yeah.
that is an incredibly complex feat that he's doing
yeah.
that is tying the movie together. Nicholas Hoult is really, really good.
He's
John Leguizamo is
yeah.
really good as well. So my issues, though, my problems with
oh,
this movie,
certainly, yeah.
of which there are some.
Have I mentioned Wanky Wank Wank?
Okay. My first point is called What Do You Want, Movie?
Yeah.
So the aim of the satire, what is being satirized and how we're supposed to feel about this is sort of all over the shop. I
yeah,
think.
Who this is basically my whole note as well. It's like, who is the bad guy here? Who are
yeah.
we? Like, I'm reading into it again on Wikipedia. One of the writers came up with the idea when he was on his honeymoon and went to a restaurant on a private island. Where, like, fuck you if you got the kind of money to do that. And then I think this is like rich people trying to satirize the rich, but not understanding why people don't like them, really. So it just feels like this weird toothless thing of like, oh, aren't we the worst? Oh, we are the worst. It's like you don't understand the perspective of anything, because you're the call is coming from inside the house, effectively. Like you're
yeah.
trying to draw the house from inside the house, and you can't do that, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So Margot emerges as this sort of like, oh, working class hero eating her cheeseburger, and she's escaped
yeah.
all of them. But then he's also killed all of these line cooks and stuff.
Yeah.
And I get that these are professional chefs, but I wouldn't say that being a professional chef, being a chef is notoriously quite badly paid
yeah.
and not great. So like, what about the fucking pot wash
yeah.
and like everyone else in the kitchen?
Yeah. I mean, all chefs want to die. That's just standard, but not like this.
So what it isn't is this like high-end, this chef who comes from humble origins and sort of hates what he's become, takes it out on all of these rich people who really deserve to die, because it isn't made, the morality of why these people deserve their fate is really unclear. And I think that that's particularly emphasised by John Leguizamo, why can't I say his
Leguizamo.
Name? Leguizamo.
Yeah.
John Leguizamo's assistant.
Yeah.
is there. And there's a point, and so she's a PA and she's getting
yeah.
murdered as well. And the movie kind of almost acknowledges this and really fudges it, because they're like, he says to her at one point, oh, have you got student loans? And
yeah.
she's like, no. And they're like, okay, you deserve to die then. You're like, what? Because she can afford...
Yeah, maybe she worked really
because
hard.
Because she afford
yeah.
college. Maybe her parents saved for
yeah.
like her whole life to... Like, it's such a bizarre value judgment.
Yeah.
So what they don't do is the villains aren't clear, and...
Well, I think, again, what that speaks to is like a clumsy attempt to position yourself with, for want of a better word, the poor. So it's like, oh, who do the poor hate? People that don't have student loans. Well, we'll throw that in as a beat. It's like, well, no, you've not really understood the nuance of that situation there,
right? So there's like the billionaire couple who, and his sort of motivation for killing them is like, well, you've been to this restaurant like 12
times.
They
keep eating there and don't appreciate
food. You don't appreciate the food. You don't even remember what you've eaten. That seems kind of fair enough. Yeah. The food critic is, those characters, the two food critics, you are designed to hate them from the second that they arrive. That's fine. Nicholas Hoult is obviously a monster for what he's done. But John Leguizamo's, he doesn't seem to have... Oh, the motivation that they give is that he did a movie that he didn't enjoy one time.
That Ralph Fiennes didn't like, which then makes... Yeah, again, makes Ralph Fiennes an out-and-out psychopath rather than a sort of satirical Avenger. And they can't decide what he is because they can't decide what their fucking perspective is.
That's it. And so you're left feeling quite weird, I think, where it doesn't feel like justice has been served. Yeah. You definitely don't...
That'd be a better tagline, justice is served. Hey. There you go.
In something like The White Lotus, right, which has been a satire of the rich that's been on recently, it's presented as quite a sort of nuanced portrait and you sort of hate everybody. Or we were watching Search Party.
Search Party or Succession is the classic example of all these projects where, like, these people are just entitled and they're all the fucking worst and you hate them. But then you're fine with all the terrible things that happen to them, right? Because it's like, oh, they're all just the worst. And you could really position yourself with Ralph Fiennes as a heroic character of, like, he's going to get his own back on these awful fucks.
But then he doesn't escape.
No, he doesn't pull anything off. He's just miserable and kills himself.
Yeah.
And again, if you're a millionaire celebrity chef and you'd rather be a cheeseburger cook, go and work at a fucking burger van. It's not difficult.
That's what I mean. So, like, the moral universe doesn't feel very well thought through, and it seems to take a bizarre stance on a lot of its characters. I think one thing that I'm always really conscious about when I write something, when I create something, is like, how do I want the audience to feel at the end? How do I want them to come out of whatever the show that I've done is? Like, what would I like them to feel like? Oh, I want you to go and have a, like, be talking about it and trying to unpack it. Or do I want you to just, like, feel, oh, I had such a lovely time. Like, what is it? I don't know that this movie, the ending is so absurd and so heightened, and it's supposed to be this kind of victory note. And I don't know if it's just that it hasn't been set up sufficiently before that to pull that off.
I think the problem with that, again, that confused note at the end, is that it almost becomes Team America World Police, right? For those that remember that one. Where it's like, poor people eating cheeseburgers, we're the real heroes. It's like, is that what you're trying to tell me? Because are we supposed to be happy that a room full of rich people burned whilst we eat our cheeseburgers, which is a very reductive take on the working classes, frankly. Yeah, it is a little bit insulting. Again, seems to come from somebody who's got more money than...
And also, not everyone there is a billionaire. And this goes to my next point, which is about the tone. So the tone is, you would think from the synopsis that we are going for this really arch, heightened, I think we're aiming for like a Glass Onion take, right?
Where it's they missed.
Where it's like mischievous satire, black comedy, I think is where it's going. But what derails that is that they keep throwing in... And I think you can absolutely pull off horror comedy. I think it was a really difficult thing to pull off. And the reason for that is both horror and comedy are all about the build-up and the release of tension.
Yeah.
But what often happens when you mix a horror and a comedy together is that you put a joke in and it releases the tension, which undermines the horror.
It's very hard to balance both.
It's really hard to balance both. You have to be real, really careful. And I'm working on a ghost story at the moment, and the guy that I'm working with suggested that I draw a graph of like where I'm building tension and where I'm going to break it with a scare.
Not to praise John Landis, because the man's a fucking monster. Killed 3 people. 2 of them were children. But I remember years ago, Empire Magazine said, and it always stuck with me, the reason that American Werewolf in London works is that the funny parts are funny and the scary parts are scary, because they're in different bits, they're not on top of each other.
Yeah.
So, like, you have genuinely frightening stuff in that film, but then also you have his zombie mate coming back that only he can see in the lulls, which gives you the laugh in the downbeats, and then you have the, you know.
It's exactly that. It's really hard to pull off, and even people who are good at it, so the League of Gentlemen guys, who've been doing this for a really long time, still often they have misses with this. So I was watching the most recent Inside Number 9 Christmas special, and there was a point where they chucked a joke in and I was like, you've just totally punctured all your tension there. It's a difficult thing to do. I think that this doesn't manage to do those things, and part of the reason that tone is unclear and that it has some like genuinely quite sort of frighteningy It's less horror, and it's more in a kind of Agatha Christie thrillery, these people are trapped and they're going to be picked off kind of way, which is cool. That's good tension. But they then put in like a tragic backstory. So the stuff about Anya, his mum sitting there, he's sitting there drinking, mute, looking completely miserable, presumably knowing that she's about to die. Yeah. And all of his stuff with his childhood is treated really, really seriously.
I think the better way to the way that you sort of do these characters funny is that they are completely oblivious to all suffering and to their own peril, right? Mm. So, like, you could give them tragic backstories, but their tragic backstory is like, you know, I wanted a Ferrari when I was 17. My dad could only afford a Porsche, and that's what, you know, like, that's how you mock the rest of the guests. And the other thing is that, like you say, by trying to make the unpleasant stuff weighty, you're ruining any chance at comedy, right? Because it becomes a lead balloon around it.
Well, you can do it, but it takes such craftsmanship. Yeah. It's so difficult to pull off, and the thing is that they don't do anything with those like tragic and like the stuff about him sexually harassing the line cook is taken really, really seriously. But then, and I think that the main flag for this isn't really working is that when they have a good joke, it takes you by surprise, and you're like, oh, that feels weird. That was a really good joke.
Yeah. Oh, it's alive again. Yeah. It's like I say, you want to have like. You could do this, but the obvious note that sort of should work on paper but doesn't because it's so muddled is that, like, Nicholas Holt and the food critics think this is brilliant and are completely unaware that they're and you should have them completely unaware of that right to the line, right? This is, like, the obvious example is when Monty Python made Holy Grail. I think it was Eric Idle who mentioned this. They released it in America, and it said the Black Knight, who, like... Mm. You know, keeps getting like bits hacked off of him and won't accept that he's lost a fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said like America was just going through like Vietnam and all the sort of protests and the Kent State stuff had just happened. It's 1969. And he said like they didn't laugh very much at the Black Knight. Like violence wasn't funny in America at the time. And he said it somewhere around his second leg coming off, they started to laugh at it because it's become so ridiculous that you cannot not laugh. But that's what you need to do with these characters, right? Like they're on board for this sort of performance art dinner and you're having people literally bludgeoned and hacked to pieces in front of them and they're like, this is quite good. Yeah. Like have them be so oblivious to pain and suffering that's the note that you want to take, surely.
Something like that. I mean, there are a couple of really, really brilliant jokes in it. There's a point where they get all the men and they're like, we're going to give you a head start, and then one guy just bolts before he's even finished his sentence.
Correct.
And it's really funny and it's a great character note for that character, but it completely stuck out. It's like, oh
yeah,
there's a really good joke there.
Yeah.
And that just shows you kind of where we are. The third point about why I think this doesn't work is that whilst it has some great twists and turns in it, it does that thing of like, in the moment, you're like, oh, but then you think about it afterwards, you're like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. And that a good twist should make complete sense. It should be like jigsaw pieces slotting into place for you. Yeah. And it feels really satisfying. And suddenly you can see the full picture. But with these twists, so for example, Nicholas Holt's character, I remember coming like talking to you after the movie, like about 3 hours afterwards, I think we were going to bed or something. Mm. And I was like, Nicholas Holt.
Hang on a minute. Yeah. Hang on, that was bollocks.
That just doesn't make any sense. Of like,
I had this reaction to Lost, the TV series, which I watched all of, start to finish, back in the day.
Fool.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It becomes a sunk cost fallacy where I was so invested, and I think a lot of the fandom were, that like, at the end of it, like, yeah, that was pretty good. That was a pretty good ending to that series. And about 2 years later, you start walking down the street going, hang on, that was bollocks. It's like that, but on a compressed time. Or like, do you remember when Episode 1 came out, the Star Wars movie, and people were like, what was it like? It was pretty good. it's that realisation. This wasn't good enough to, or wasn't hyped enough to even generate that. It's, like you say, an hour later, you're like, hang on, what the fuck was that point about?
Yeah, absolutely. Just lots of it just doesn't really hang together.
Nah.
I mean, some of it doesn't hang together at the time, but there's other stuff where it's a twist. I think Nicholas Holt is the exact example of like, he says that he knows that he's going and he's going to die, and yet he still goes willingly. He's only in his 30s, like his dedication to... It doesn't make sense that he would willingly go to his death, that he thinks that this is worth dying for, and killing someone else.
Drag an innocent sex worker with him.
And also, why would he tell him? Why would Ralph Fiennes tell someone that he doesn't know
at all? Why would you send him a letter saying you're invited but you have to die for it?
And why would he tell him and no one else? Like,
I mean, maybe, like, again, that's such an obvious joke that you could write there. Like, maybe it said, like, he thought that the food was going to be to die for. Like, oh, you'll literally die. And they're like, no, we said in the letter, you will literally die. We were very clear about this. It's like, no, I thought that was an expression. It's like, no, we...
Yeah. Well, so this kind of goes into one of my fixes, which is, I think this is a really preposterous, it's a great thriller setup. It looks like it should be loads and loads of fun. Yeah. I think just axe all of this like difficult backstory about people's domestic trauma and stuff. Stop trying to make it weighty and sensitive and just lean into it being absurd and fun and like farcical, because it is a farce. If you're going to end up with people in giant marshmallow capes getting burnt alive, like, just let's just have a laugh.
It's kind of Occam's chef's knife, right? Just cut off all these bits that don't work.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think my fixes are to lean into the comedy and the horror and to be more fun. And I think the way that you do that is by taking out, like I said, some of this harrowing backstory and then just engineering that ride. It's that thing I say about that's a Sarah Waters quote, that a story should be a roller coaster ride, and this should be a fucking great roller coaster. Lots of loops and twists, and we spin around, and we should. And the way that part of the way that you do that is to tighten the pace up.
Yeah.
Because we often have these long, silenty bits or bits that are thoughtful or stuff, and it just doesn't work. Let's just go.
Yeah, I think, a lot of the characters, like, weirdly, for a film that insists on having so much backstory for people, like, a lot of the characters aren't very well drawn. Like, maybe as an idea that I'm sort of working through as I'm saying it, as often am, but maybe have, like, Nicholas Holt thinks everything is fucking brilliant all the time. He's blown away constantly because he's such a fanboy. The restaurant critics are constantly unimpressed, even when there's, like, blood being sprayed over them and stuff like that. And then have John Leguizamo, give him more to do. I like this, because he said, like, he worked on Executive Decision, which is the movie where Steven Seagal has to heroically sacrifice himself as a shock to the audience. And in the making of that film, on the day they came to shoot that scene, Steven Seagal refused to leave his trailer and then tried to have the script rewritten so that he doesn't die in it. And proposed a solution where he, like, falls out of a plane but then hangs onto a helicopter and survives. And John, and apparently everyone fucking hates Steven Seagal, including John Leguizamo, who's in that movie.
Yeah.
And he said, like, he based this performance on Seagal, just some sort of washed up fucking blowhard dickhead action star that nobody likes. That's a great character. Do more with that. Give him, like go full Seagal with him. Give him, like, long monologues about what a badass he is and how he used to be in the CIA, which he wasn't. And so,
which would be perfect. Yeah. Then you've got to tackle these guards who are, like, gonna kill you.
Yeah, he can't do it.
And they're like, well, you know all this kung fu. That's a brilliant thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's so much you could do with that character. He just kind of sits there, and a lot of this stuff, like the food, just kind of sits there, right? And it's
including the guests right at the end when I was like, why are you all just submitting to being burnt alive? Why wouldn't you start fighting?
They're splashing petrol around the place. You've got nothing left to lose at this point. You might as well go
like
out
20
go
of
out
you
big.
Just
yeah.
bum rush them
yeah
yeah well I think so this is my sort of main point, which is just about having a clearer aim and a clearer, more compelling cause and effect, right? So if the setup is it's kind of based on And Then There Were None, right, in some ways, which is, if you don't know, I'm going to spoiler And Then There Were None.
But it's been out for 100 odd years.
I won't spoiler it completely. But the premise is all these people are invited to an island, to a hotel, all these disparate guests, and they don't quite know why they're there, and they start getting killed one by one, and you find out that there is a reason each of them has committed some form of crime that has gone unpunished, and they are now being punished by somebody. I think like Saw operates on it. I don't know.
Yeah, Saw sort of does, but it's more of a...
Basically, it's like a vigilante justice kind of narrative. So if we're doing
it's like Death Wish Hotel.
But if we're doing that everybody that is on this island, except for Margot, has been brought there because they've done something. Oh God, I've lost him now.
I'm sorry.
He's doing that face where he's completely not listening because you're doing something in your own head.
I was just picturing Death Wish Hotel. Welcome to my hotel. I'm Charles Bronson. it's a weird matchup in my head that's going on. I'm quite enjoying it.
Can I continue the podcast?
Yes, sorry, carry
on. Okay. That is a perfectly fine setup and it works really well. And even though we're kind of familiar with that setup of here's a group of people, they're going to get picked off one by one, their terrible things are going to be revealed, it's still a fun, interesting premise. I think people still buy into that. Again, Glass Onion.
Proves that it can be done very well.
Right, proves it can be done really, really well. But again, those characters need to be detailed, they need to be surprising, and there needs to be a very big difference between their that how they present themselves to the world. So, oh God, I'm going to quote John York because I've been trapped in a room with him for months.
Fine.
Doing the BBC Academy. He talks a lot about facade and flaw. Right. So the what are they presenting to the world? This character that they come in as.
Almost and facade then, and flaw. Isn't
yes. Right. Who, then who they're revealed to be. Why, what did you think I said?
I know, you skimmed over and said facade and flaw.
Oh, it's because I fucking hate quoting him.
Facade and flaw. I think they make some of our cookware. I'm not sure.
So watching these people come in, you know, full of themselves, yeah. like John Leguizamo yeah. presenting himself as this hero, and then we find out who he really is underneath yeah. that. We love that stuff. That stuff is fun. But it just isn't clearly drawn. Like with the PA, yeah. why does she deserve to die? What has she done?
Yeah.
What is all of this? And is it? It also isn't. The other two references I had were Dante's Inferno and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
Because they're well read.
yeah. You contain multitudes, honey. Dante and the Chocolate Factory is a movie that needs to be made, I feel.
So in Dante's Inferno gives us the idea of just punishments. So, and it's kind of, you know, a lot of this exists in kind of Greek mythology as well. Like, you know, Tantalus, who's always slightly out of reach of the food that you want. And yeah. that would be if you were a gluttonous person, you yeah. would be, you know, the punishment matches the crime.
In my head, I'm just trying to rhyme the Oompa Loompa song with Lake of Fire now. It's quite difficult.
And it's similar in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So these people get their, you know, their flaw leads them to their punishment.
Yeah.
But we don't get... So we get this tortilla moment, which is really fun, where it's been like laser cut that these bros are doing like fraud and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But what they don't then get is they, ironically, for a fucking thing based around food, they don't get their just desserts.
Yeah.
Everyone gets meted out the same punishment, regardless of their supposed crimes, which vary on a scale
yeah.
enormously.
Yeah, you think, I mean, again, the unobvious thing would be have like everyone served a different dish yes. related to their crimes, but they yes. all get the same fucking meal. Which,
yes,
yeah.
they do, Luke. Yeah. They do, Luke. And they also don't particularly get picked off one by one.
No.
Which is both an interesting format and also raises the stakes for the people who are left, because yeah. the fewer of you there are, the harder it is to fight back against these people. So I just think it needs some art.
Yeah.
It just needs to borrow, actually. It leans into a lot of classical ideas and structures, but then just shies away from executing them properly.
Maybe have individual diners, like every course, like one group or one diner has to go up like onto a center stage and eat the meal under a spotlight, and you all get served the same thing, but then we explain what this is about.
Yeah.
And that one diner has to sort of be grilled, no pun intended, about, like, you know, here's some tortillas with a laser engraving of the receipts from your company that you've been embezzling from, and everyone's eating the tortillas, but we're all looking at this yeah. one guy, and then he is taken out the back by the hellion Oompa Loompas.
But it sort of gets messy of, like, this angel investor, like, what did he do? Why isn't he in the restaurant being killed? Well, he gets killed outside the restaurant.
And also,
what the fucking
his,
sense does
his
that
crime
make?
Was, like, taking over the restaurant during COVID when it was short on money. It's like, well, you don't even like working at this restaurant, Ralph Fiennes. Go and open a burger van.
Yeah. Like, why do they let the men escape? Other than it feels like we need to move setting to be outside the restaurant
for a
bit.
Yeah, we're all bored of filming
in
this
room.
Yeah.
We're going to move out. Why do they let the men look like they're going to escape and then they just get hunted down and brought back while the women get another court? It just, there's so much stuff that just doesn't really hang together. And yeah. so as a ride, it's really bumpy and stoppy and starty.
Yeah.
And it just isn't satisfying.
No.
It doesn't build to these satisfying peaks and troughs that
I
you
mean,
want.
To echo Anya Taylor-Joy's character's complaint, you're still hungry at the end of it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Thank you.
I can't beat that.
There you go.
This is our summary of the menu.
Stick a fork in it, we're done.
Very, very nice. So
yeah,
we should talk about the podcast.
Yes, we're gonna be slowing down a bit. You've got a ton of work.
Yeah.
And also we're just tired of trying to find mediocre films to watch and feel like like at least a couple of times a week, like, should we watch something that's probably gonna be terrible for the sake of doing this show that doesn't really earn us anything?
Do you know what? It isn't the most fun thing to do when you settle down in an evening and go, should we try and find something that's not that good?
Yeah, oh yeah, can we?
And then do
and also have to do like pages and pages of notes on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really know how we were doing a podcast a week before.
No, I know.
I think mainly we were just neglecting a lot of other areas of our lives.
Yeah.
So we don't know what we're doing except to say that this is a pause, not a stop.
Yeah.
Completely.
We're going to keep doing it. But like the reason we started doing this show was quite often we'd see a film or a TV show or even a play and go, You know why this didn't work and we ended up talking about it anyway, so we just started recording that. So maybe we should do it in a more organic form where if that crops up in our day-to-day life, we'll talk about it and do a show. But like, we've got to stop grinding away at the mountain of terrible work out
feel
there.
Like we're slightly losing our joy. Yeah. So in order to preserve that joy for us and for you, we are the planet. We're not sure. Either we will release odd episodes or we will curate an entire series out of our favourite stuff that we want to talk about.
And slightly more themed and more...
more thoughtful and hopefully better quality, and then we will release that at a later date. So just stay tuned. If you are one of our wonderful patrons, we're going to be doing a special patron episode to explain what happens with Patreon and all of that stuff. We just want to say thank you so much. If you are listening to this, we really really appreciate you, and please reach out, because recording a podcast into the void is
it's partly why we're going mad.
It's just slightly weird. And so if you do like our podcast, if you are a listener, please get in touch and say hello. Tell us what you like. Tell us if there's stuff you want us to focus on, or all of that stuff. Because otherwise, we just sort of,
yeah, we're like the last DJ in the zombie apocalypse movie, just staying on the air as long as we can.
Is anyone out there? And if you have reached out already, then thank you. There are tons of ways you can get in touch with us, should you wish to.
You can email us, artsholepodcast@gmail.com.
We do still have... our Patreon will stay up and running. Yeah. So if you wanted to listen to the back episodes up there, it's patreon.com/thearts hole. You can also reach us on Twitter.
At artsholepod.
And I am on Instagram @scripttits.
Yes.
You can find me there. You can DM me if you are a listener.
We shall return, but maybe in a less regular format.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And we will be back at some point as a surprise.
See you in a bit. Bye.